Thanks a lot for coming along. I'm afraid I'm reusing some slides that I gave that I used for a different presentation in an internal sort of summit we have at Intel. I hadn't planned ahead to do this talk, but the opportunity came up since Zeeshan gave his talk yesterday to present this here. So apologies about the branding and the Intel confidential nonsense it says on some of the slides. Don't worry about it. You can ignore that. My name's Robert Bragg. I work for Intel's Open Source Technology Center in London. I'm a graphics engineer. I've enjoyed graphics for a long time and had the opportunity to work on a number of layers in the graphics stack on Linux over the years. One of the first companies I worked for was Imagination Technologies, where I had the opportunity to do sort of silicon enabling for some of their hardware and work through the OpenGL driver and some of the kernel driver, and that was that kind of low-level work. And then I moved to a small company called OpenHand, where we did this clutter toolkit and gained some experience with high-level UI technologies and threw into sort of compositors and even a little bit of work in Firefox. But as well as having this passion for graphics, I've been fortunate to work in an office which has got co-located designers, visual designers, interaction designers, as well as engineers that have been involved in creating applications that are designed by these guys. And so I've seen the process by which we come up with ideas and we create applications. And so hopefully I have some insight into where that process is not as effective as I think it could be. So I'm here to talk about this project called RIG, which I started about a year ago, and I've been working on sort of part-time. Actually, that's an old sort of mock-up, and there's a few people missing from that credit list. Neil Roberts, he's a guy that I work with maintaining a project called Coggle. He's been helping with this. Damien Lespiau, he's on the graphics team in the OTC. Flamina is an intern I've been working with. There's a guy called Chris Cummings who's been helping out a bit as well, actually. Mikhail's a visual designer. He did this mock-up and helped with the visuals of this project. And Shannon Schroeder's been helping out as well with some of the non-technical aspects of this project. And so I want to give a bit of background to why I started this project. And so the focus here, good for Intel. I mean, so part of the aim of this project is to drive innovation in the space of user interfaces. We're looking to explore fuller use of the GPU because. Let me just step back quickly. This is going to be a little bit rough and ready because I haven't run through this. Through that experience of, say, 5 years of me working on UI technologies, I guess I've built up this kind of feeling that, you know, we're really wasting this GPU hardware, which is in our devices like mobile phones and our tablets and our laptops. The state of UI technologies today, we use the GPU for basically shifting textured rectangles around, and so I've had this mounting feeling that there's got to be something that we can do to expose more creativity to the visual design process and expose that GPU hardware, so fully utilizing the GPU hardware here. So this is what I'm going to go through a bit more, in a bit more detail. And through that experience with working with visual designers, what can we do to optimize the workflow from coming up with an idea to creating an application? So I'm going to just quickly recap the state of the art. And the state of the art is toolkits like GTK, Qt, Swing, Clutter, Evas, and even web technologies that we're familiar with, like WebKit and Gecko. All of these are actually extremely similar, technically speaking, if you look at how they all work. So they basically implement some form of the PostScript or PDF rendering model as the foundation, that's the vocabulary by which all of these technologies work. with. And so that vocabulary, in essence, is these three things. It is just, you have 2D shapes, you can fill them with images. Those 2D shapes are basically just always rectangles, like rounded rectangles if you're getting pretty fancy, and you, theoretically you can use Bezier curves and all that fancy stuff, but who actually does that? And you fill these 2D shapes with images and you have text. That's your vocabulary. And then these are all built up. You build your UI up using the painter's algorithm, which just means let's draw the background, and we're all basically familiar with this. Draw your background first, your midground, and then your labels and foreground on top of that. That's the model. And you have they all employ some form of scene graph to organize the primitives, the widgets, the components of the UI. So you have a hierarchy with a window at the top. And this is what defines how you implement the painter's algorithm. The stuff at the top of the graph is the background, and the leaves are the foreground. So it's a pretty simple model. It works to some extent. I mean, the cornerstone of that model is the quality of those static images that you get from your visual designers, really. So these technologies are pretty much all aimed at engineers, and that's part of the problem. They either come as an imperative API in C, Python, and such things, or they have a markup language. So we're all familiar with HTML, but there are things like QML as well. And yes, they all have this this contract and this promise that they will, as you develop these technologies, you will define an interface for engineers to work to, and you must keep that stable. So, you know, there's a burden involved in maintaining that stable interface so that all of your existing applications don't break as you evolve that technology. So it's pretty darn hard to think ahead of time, what interface am I going to be able to stick to for the rest of time, that I'm not going to paint myself into a corner as to how we can improve the flexibility of this technology, visually speaking, and enable more creativity for designers. That's difficult. So I sort of said this overwhelming feeling of through this experience that we could do so much more with more creative use of the GPU. This is spelling out the problem. So we've got this. The first one is this limited vocabulary. It's a PDF PostScript rendering model. It is like 20, 25 years old, and it hasn't changed. So we've got the middleman toolkits. This is this sort of layer where it's a means to an end. These toolkits are just there for an engineer to recreate the vision of the designer. And there's this sort of language barrier between their vision and the technology. The designers tend to have very little insight into the working of these technologies. So they really are this middleman. And maybe we can think about ways of not having quite the same approach and avoid that middleman sort of translation that we deal with today. And when we think about it from the designer's perspective as well, they're using tools like Photoshop or Inkscape, GIMP, and things like After Effects. These are either intended for creating static images. They have all kinds of fancy effects available to them, but at the end of the day, you get a baked image, and then we slice it up into rectangles and build our UI with that. Or they're made for offline video processing, like After Effects, and that uses things like ray tracing to come up with its effects. There's no way those kinds of effects are going to run in real time on a phone anytime soon. So what these designers are actually trying to do is create interfaces that can run on a resource-constrained device and be responsive to input and work within a power sort of constraint. And yeah, so they really don't at the moment have tools that are actually geared towards that specific problem. So maybe we can think about sort of inventing new tools to try and improve that process. So then there's just the actual workflow. the fairly classic sort of outline of how design goes at the moment is you have the visual designer creates sort of sketches out his vision in something like Photoshop or Inkscape, and they hand that over the wall, if you like, to the engineer, who has to reinterpret that vision and translate that into an API sort of version. So at this stage, they're totally disconnected from the sort of visual creative side of things, and they're opening up, you know, reference manuals and implementing this. And they'll implement this typically on their desktop machine or laptop or so. Even if they're trying to create something for a phone, you're going to initially prototype this stuff on your laptop. And once you kind of got it working, then you're going to start to sort of integrate this with a build system to be able to cross-compile it or whatever it takes to get it onto your phone, and then start playing around with, oh, how does this perform, how does this respond? And at that point there, where you're actually starting to test it on the device, there's a pretty high chance that you're going to realize that there's like some problem, like it doesn't, the design doesn't fit the form factor like the designer originally expected it to. It doesn't respond as quickly as it needs to. There's like so many possibilities that it could just not be quite right, and you're going to have to go all the way back to square one, where the designer has to rethink the idea and the interaction model to be able to work with the technology that they have. Because the alternative is that you go back to engineering and try and fix the technology, but that's an unknown quantity as to whether or not you're going to be able to fix the technology in time if you've got a deadline. And so your options are pretty slim at that point to have to redesign things. And another aspect of this is the ability to objectively measure certain quantities of quality that are important for user interfaces. You know, a consumer expects that their phone is going to respond in a timely manner when they touch it and move around the UI. They expect it not to eat through their battery, or they expect a certain level of visual quality. And right now, we don't have the integration in our tooling and the processes by which to really make sure that that we're on top of those quantities right through the whole design and development process. Those tend to just be not so much an afterthought, but they're at the end of the line in the pipeline of how we develop these things. So I guess I kind of interleave what some of the solutions for these are as I was going through the problems, but obviously one of the main things that we're interested in here is throwing away that limited PostScript model and seeing if we can explore way more features of the GPU there's a lot of flexibility in the GPU. What can we unlock there and give to the visual designers to allow them to just be more creative? The model of the PostScript model is actually really difficult to implement efficiently on a GPU, just given the way that the GPU works. It's kind of difficult to avoid the overdraw in the PostScript model, because you're going from background to foreground, and that's the model by which you build up the scene. It's hard to avoid coloring in all of those redundant fragments and pixels behind the stuff you're layering on top of it. That's just quite a tricky problem. And so, as you can probably guess from the screenshot at the beginning of this talk, a big aspect to how I sort of see us being able to solve many of those problems is to develop bespoke tooling, which is what the RIG project is looking at doing. So what we're doing is we're actually trying to learn a lot from how game developers work here, because game developers face so many of the same problems that we face as UI developers, except that they have done a much better job of taking advantage of GPU hardware than we have. They have to create interfaces. They have to create something that can run in real time, respond, interactively with the user, with the user, and we need to do the same kinds of things. And the way that those guys work is that they have a rendering engine, and they often build up a lot of bespoke tools to help them create their worlds, create their games. And they have to work as well with designers and engineers. And if you look at projects like Unity 3D, where they have really quite, you know, capable tooling to be able to connect that whole workflow between game designers and the engineers that create the sort of logic and the game itself. So we're looking to sort of rip off their ideas as much as possible, because we can build on their experience. Especially they've done a lot of work into researching algorithms that let us do really interesting visual things with the GPU. So we want to create a technology which is a UI rendering engine that we can share between something that's going to deploy onto a device to run a UI, and that the tool itself is going to be using, so that the design process is actually constrained by the capabilities of that technology. So the visual designer, So we're giving them specialized tools during the visual design process. We want them to also be really connecting that visual development stage with the hardware that they want to design for. So we have implemented the ability to have a network connection between the design tool and the device that you're targeting, so that while you're working in the design tool, as soon as you play around with animations and things, that's going to immediately update what's on the device, so you can pick it up and check what's the responsiveness like, what's the quality of this like, so that you're connecting testing right to that early prototyping stage, which there's just no substitute for testing your ideas on real hardware. So we see that as a pretty compelling way of improving our workflow and optimizing the time it takes to develop applications. So the last one isn't necessarily going to all be done within this same tool, but we need to develop tools for measuring, say, the power usage while you're running. So you're testing your UI on the device, which is on your desk, and you want to be able to measure, so what's the power usage while I'm doing certain things, or measuring the latency by which, when you swipe, how long does it take for the interface to start responding to that. So we're even thinking of things like, well, high-speed video cameras and processing recordings of that kind of thing, but we need to think through that problem a bit as well. So I guess at this point it's time to just demo rig. If anyone wants to just jump in and ask questions, especially now that I'm going to basically demo it, then just raise your hand and start hassling me. Since I wasn't really expecting to be demoing this, and I've been hacking on this, the chances that this is going to just blow up are fairly high. So let's kind of go through it a bit in order. This area on the left here we're aiming for a kind of asset-driven workflow here. So we're aiming for this area is where you import, say, things that were created in third-party tools. It could be images made by designers in Photoshop. It could be models made in 3D Studio Max. It could be logic that's created by engineers that needs to be integrated. It could be audio, so these kinds of things. And this sort of search area, so we can search for images or videos or whatever we need. And then we pull those assets into this center area, which is where we actually build up the user interface itself, so we can get immediate visual feedback about the scenes that we're trying to create. On the right-hand side here, which is unpopulated at the moment, but this bar would be where we would expect to put more tooling capabilities, and it's put there so that it can sort of transiently expand into the space of the interface to give more detailed information about the tooling, and when you're not using those, then it can sort of shift out of the way. And then down at the bottom here, this is where we would deal with controlling a lot of the properties. Actually, let me just, if I select this, then we can just sort of see, actually, before I go down to the bottom area. This is some of the properties for one of the objects in this scene. There's this idea of entities and components, and an entity is like something in essentially just relative to a parent in space, and it has a bunch of components that can be associated, that adding more semantic information to that object. The more components you add, the more semantic meaning that thing has. And these sort of red buttons here are about being able to control a particular property. So if you click one of those, then it adds it down into this area down here, which is called, these are called controllers. Initially, when we were first developing this, is just for timeline management, but that's in the process of evolving beyond just keyframe-based animation. At the moment, this example is just built around keyframe animations, and it's just a toy demo of having the idea, I guess, in this case, is a phone application, and we've got notifications bubbling up, and something that's more recent would be more prominent. I'm just going to turn the effects on so you can see a bit of the visual style here. So we've got a depth of field effect, which shows that something further away looks softer. So it's modeling how a real-world camera works. And we're also playing around with shadow mapping in this example, which is a way of having real-time dynamic shadows. If I select this, then we've also got real-time lighting. So I guess if I play around with this, make it brighter, play around with the color, and you have like the standard model for lights based on ambient, diffuse, and specular components. And if I turn off the effects in this area here, this little widget here is a light source, basically, we can play around with. But obviously, we're ripping off at the moment very traditional effects that you see in game engines. This is largely for practicality, because we had to bring up a whole tool, and we didn't have the time to do the research on new visual algorithms. These ones are well understood, and they work well together. But we'd be looking to do research on effects that give you a stylized visual that would be, which is not something you'd necessarily expect in a game, but would make more sense in a UI. But even these ones, I think that there is scope for having a designer that has to use their taste, obviously, to not go overboard, because this does give you a lot of power to create a UI that would be an immersive 3D virtual kind of thing. It could easily go over the top. I mean, it is a 3D environment that you're modeling within, but you don't have to go overboard. So let me just, at the same time, show you some of the effects that, let me just get rid of the background. And this one doesn't have, I haven't got assets that are really geared towards this, but it's a technique that as well uses the GPU a bit more than we're doing at the moment. It's called bump mapping, but it's, that funny texture there, that image, that represents a modulation in the shape of a surface. So it represents a height map, essentially. And you can immediately see that when I clicked that the surface looked, it changed visually. But what's kind of interesting is when you select the light and you change the direction of the light. Oh, is it hung? Yeah. There we go. No surprise that it didn't last too long. Let's get rid of this. So that's just a stock icon, nothing special about that. And the bump map that goes with this was just generated by running it through a program that uses essentially a Sobel filter that says where there's contrast in the image that there are edges there, so it automatically generates this idea that edges, you're moving up and down. So if you take the light source and see if it crashes again, you see that there's like a detail in the surface that gets changed, that changes when you move the light. As I said, this is not something that's crafted for this purpose, but I think with a bit of care from a visual designer, knowing what they wanted to achieve, and with dedicated assets, then there's room to make something just a bit more dynamic and interesting. That light source might doesn't have to be moving, you know, every time you move your finger around. It could look a little bit over the top, but maybe it moves as you sort of pan between spaces on your phone. This one's a fun example of just using the GPU to stylize something that shows this. I'm going to put a video on this just to show. The video is just to show really that it's something that can be done in real time. And this pointillism is called a pointillism effect at the moment. And all it's doing is grid sampling on the original image. I'll scale it just right up so you can sort of see what's going on at the lowest level. And there's knobs and things to be able to twist to control how this works. But we can stylize something. And this pointillism effect gets used quite a bit in static images on posters and things. But we can do this dynamically, and depending on the lightness of the pixels within the image, then we're changing the size of some geometry to just create this like nice-looking effect. You might want to have this in a background of some aspect of the home area of a device interface. It's like that. It's up to the designer. I get to leave it up to them. But I'd like to be able to provide them tools and freedom, and but constrained as well to things that I know can run efficiently on the GPU. And it's almost cheaper to run this video effect than it would be to actually show the video normally, just because in this case, I'll turn off the casting of the shadows just to make it. Anyway, the only points where we do like color space conversion, like YUV to RGB, are the points which we are showing as circles. So we're doing, in some ways, less work than you would do to show the image normally. Anyway, that's the kind of a detail. But so that's kind of the state of the tool at the moment, I suppose. I think I can show you the way in which the design tool connects to a slave device, actually, which it's kind of nice. So this represents a device sitting on your desk, which might be a phone or so. Well, I don't have anything that's got this like running on a real phone, but this is we had an Android backend that we created a while ago, but it needs like some updating or so. Where did the slave go? So that there is connecting this design to that device. It's a little bit cramped on this resolution, but so if I scrub through this animation, then you see the effects are enabled on this one while they're not in the editing area, so you can get a feel for what it's like on the device in here. But then here, if I go, say, to the end of the timeline and grab this, change the animation at the end, go back to my device, it's anyway immediately updated, and so you can go through and check what's the timing of that change to the keyframing, and then iterate until you've got something that you're happy with the work that, while seeing it for real on the actual device. And this is done using Avahi at the moment, so we've got zero conf so that it can just discover the device as simply as possible. Okay, so that's basically all the content I've got at the moment to be able to introduce Rig, but be happy to take any questions, and thanks a lot for your time. Cheers.
I had a question about the point effect you're doing. So that would be a shader that you'd programmed, right?
Well, actually, that's not just a familiar with the terms fragment processing and vertex processing in terms of GPUs? I mean, on a GPU...
Somewhat, yes.
Well, so often video effects are just done as fragment programs, like, say, you were doing just colorizing or, to desaturate or contrast or brightness, this kind of thing. You're just running over every single pixel in the image. In this case, we're actually... We have geometry for the cells, if you like, in that effect. And it starts off as basically a tiny unit rectangle for each cell, which texture maps a circle. And when it reads through the video data, it's only sampling on these coarse grid points. So it only does like the YUV color space conversion on those specific points, looks at the lightness of those, and then depending on the lightness, it's essentially scaling up that geometry. So overall, you're doing way, way less fragment processing than you would often do for a video effect, and you're moving a bit to the vertex.
That was really interesting, but I'll continue with what I mean is you want to provide certain effects in the tool that designers can use. So I'm wondering if you could explain a bit how you would integrate, add to those effects, how you would integrate your own shader. Will you be able to sort of drop in a GLSL coded?
So one of the particular design decisions made here is that it doesn't really scale to try and come up with a really modularized rendering system. Like at the extreme where we have clutter, I mean it's changed now, but with clutter you used to be able to have it so that every single actor could write all kinds of imperative code to do a load of drawing, and it's very flexible, but if you want to optimize how you use a GPU, you tend to have to do really quirky, weird things and make various assumptions. And it works a lot better if you just make that piece of rendering code a lot more monolithic. So in Rig, it's much more sort of like a game engine, monolithic rendering engine. And if you want to extend it, then the engineers that have this specialized experience to know how to program a GPU efficiently, they should come and contribute to the Rig project and add their effects and add their features there. Because the number of people that have specialized in GPU programming is very low in comparison to the number of people that want to write applications. So we can't expect application developers to be writing GLSL and weird, sort of shaders and integrating their rendering ideas into a modular system and also get the performance that we really demand for these kinds of interfaces.
So I have a couple of questions. The first is, what are you actually sending to the device? Is it just this display list basically with animation descriptions and...
As in over the network?
Yeah.
To the device. The rendering engine itself is running on the device, so it's the description of the scene, which is we have this scene graph of entities, and entities just have a position in 3D which can be rotated and transformed relative to a parent, and potentially we could be sending multiple of these scene graphs, and then each entity has a bunch of components which say, add the idea that you have material which says how it should be lit, or some sort of video source, image source. It could be some logic associated with that entity that triggers when you have input. This kind of high-level sort of semantic description is what's going to get sent over the wire to the device, and it's going to load that and run that.
So that kind of leads into my second question. You talked about it kind of like they were writing against, or they create their scene with Rig and sort of like a game engine.
Yeah.
So when it comes time to actually like ship the application, are they shipping the, maybe you're still working out, but are they shipping the all the assets and then this description that's interpreted?
Yeah, well, because the way that the network protocol has to be able to serialize everything that relates to the description of the scene, including the assets themselves, and we also use this. So we're using protocol buffers, which are a quite widely used way of serializing data, and they give you a nice markup for describing messages for serializing data. And we use the same protocol. We use the same mechanism for being able to serialize over the network as we do for serializing to disk. At the moment, when we serialize to disk, we're keeping references to external assets. But if you were going to make it for distribution on a device, then we would also be serializing the assets themselves in the same way that we do for the network. And you would just have this one .rig file, which you just put on the device along with the actual rig. Sort of engine itself builds in three ways. It either builds with all of the editing capabilities around it, or it builds in, as a slave, so that you can run it on a device which has that network transparency, or just for deploying on a device so it doesn't need the network transparency, doesn't need any of the editing capabilities. It's like got basically no dependencies except GL at that point, and you'd ship that device mode plus your .rig file, which has everything sort of serialized together.
Sorry, and one final question. Have you considered a web device?
I can't believe I didn't actually say this. So we're interested in supporting a bunch of platforms with this, and that includes web development, in fact. So we haven't got the full demo working yet, but at least we want to do the proof of concept to sort of see if it's feasible, and I'm kind of optimistic that it is, because we have the rendering side working with WebGL, and so, you know, this depends on GL to have access to the GPU. We're trying to push access to the GPU. The only way that we can do that in the context of the web is WebGL, and it looks like that's going to basically be across all major browsers fairly soon, including IE, and so that's where we're looking to go.
So you mentioned that the PDF rendering model, we should try to not build with that anymore.
Yeah.
So do you have specific examples on how could we apply the principles that Rick probably uses to get rid of the PDF rendering model, like the browser,
I mean,
for
even
example.
Even this initial early example, the way that you build this particular scene up, it's got intermediate renders where you have to first determine the depth of this geometry before you're able to come up with the blurring that's based on the depth distance, and there are multiple stages involved in coming up with that final result. You have to do there's a step where you look from the perspective of the light, for instance, to see, well, from the light's perspective, what geometry can I see so that I can determine what geometry is in shadow. And so, you know, there's a whole bunch more involved in that model of rendering, which is completely different to the PostScript model of, you know, you just draw your background, you draw the stuff on top of it in the middle, and you draw your labels and stuff. That's a completely different model. You couldn't achieve this kind of thing with the PostScript model in real time. But there'd be other things, like I'd be interested in at least exploring some of the stylized painterly rendering, or so where we can make something look a bit like it was painted with oil paints, or looked like it was sketched, just something aesthetically interesting that would take completely different approaches to rendering as well than even what I just described there. So they're really quite far removed from that painter's algorithm and the vocabulary of 2D shapes, text, and images. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm thinking on something like the browser, for example, which is, you know, very complex. You have to support a lot of different techniques for drawing.
Yeah.
So probably we could not completely get rid of the PDF rendering model, but maybe some of the principles that you are describing now could be applied somehow. So probably you have some specific, you know, experience with.
There would potentially be ways that you could add rendering newer rendering model capabilities within the browser, but it would either be sort of sandboxed to some region, and then you get this new model to use in a certain area. But it would be challenging to fit the PostScript model within a different model, in that in a lot of these cases, you're using depth to determine that something is behind something else. So you'd have to try and fake the idea of the PostScript layering in terms of shifting things further behind it. You might be able to sort of retrofit some of this advanced stuff into a browser which has that kind of model. But maybe we can chat afterwards about some different ideas if you're interested. Okay. Cool. Well, thanks a lot, everyone.
Thanks.